Welcome to Wall Street Unspun with your host, Peter Schiff.
But it's a giant bubble in search of a pin, and it's going to find one.
Are you confused with the ups and downs in the economy and what it means to you?
Don't believe the propaganda, and that's what it is. When you're listening to an analyst on a lot of these popular financial shows, you're not getting investment advice. You're getting propaganda.
Get ready to untangle the web of misinformation provided by the mainstream media.
These firms are trying to sell you stocks. Their real clients, their banking clients, are trying to get rid of stocks.
And now, here's your host of Wall Street Unspun, the president of Euro Pacific Capital and a licensed broker with a passion for truth. It's Wall Street Unspun with Peter Schiff.
Okay, and we are here live. This is Peter Schiff, president of Euro Pacific Capital, author of the book Crash Proof, How to Profit from the Coming Economic Collapse. And I do this show live every Wednesday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. I mean, 8 p.m. Yeah, Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific Time. And I also simulcast on the Internet. So it's on www.europac.net, my website, and on shortwave radio, 5.07 megahertz. 5.07 megahertz on shortwave. And www.europac.net. The number to call toll-free with any questions or comments is 888-678-9597. That's 888-678-9597, and I invite your calls and comments. First of all, just to remind everybody of my upcoming appearance at the New Orleans Investment Conference. If you haven't already registered, you can do so on my website for that conference. It's going to take place in New Orleans at the end of October, October 21st through October 25th. So just about a month from now. And I'm sure there's still a lot of time to register and book your airfare down there. It should be a fun time. It's a great town, and it's always a good conference. So I will be there. And also, just as far as some media appearances, you know, I was on CNBC today on The Call, and I was on that show for an hour, and I was hoping to get a lot more in, but they had a lot of surprise guests, and I only ended up speaking for a few minutes, even though I hung out in the studio there for an entire hour. I didn't really get too much in, so that was very disappointing. I will be on Bloomberg at noon tomorrow. I forget the name of the show. It's called In Focus at noon. So it'll probably be just a five-minute interview, but I'm going to be on Bloomberg Television on Thursday. Also, another note about future television appearances, I will be a regular at a specific time slot on the Fox Business News. The Fox Business News channel is a new all-day financial business channel that is going to be launched starting October 15th, so in about a couple of weeks. And basically, what I'm going to do on that network is I've agreed to be part of a permanent panel. And I think it's going to be Tuesdays and Thursdays. But when I know for sure, I'll let you know, and I'll post it on my website. But I will be on the same time on that network. So let's say it'll be every Tuesday and Thursday from, 11 to 12 or from 2 to 3. I will be part of a two- or three-member panel that will probably be there for the entire hour. So that'll put me on television quite a bit more often, more than I am now. I mean, right now I probably do, one or two appearances a week, sometimes three. But when this Fox Business Network comes on, and if I'm going to be on that network a minimum of twice a week, and maybe more, maybe even three or four times, but if I'm going to be on Fox Business News at least twice a week, when you add the CNBC, the Bloomberg, and the CNN spots, I mean, I could be, on television average of four or five times a week, pretty much every day. So there'll be plenty of opportunities to see me. I mean, I might have to stop archiving on my website because I'm going to really be running out of space because there's going to be a lot of media appearances. But anyway, as I said, when I've got the exact times down, I will mention one on the show, of course, and maybe post it on my website. I see the calls coming in. I mean, basically, a couple things I really want to talk about before I grab the calls. Number one is what's been happening with these Canadian royalty trusts. a lot of them been getting bought out. You know, we currently have three Canadian trusts that have been acquired in the last month or so. Two of them for all cash. I mean, one of them was Oceanics, which many of my clients own, which is a shipping company, and that's been bought out. And more recently, we had a company out of Abu Dhabi that's basically funded with the sovereign wealth fund money from the United Arab Emirates by a company called Prime West. Now, we've been buying Prime West for Euro Pacific Capital clients for about 10 years, so a lot of my clients own that. In addition, we used to buy a company called Shining Bank, and that, again, we've been buying that one for around 10 years. And a lot of my clients owned that until very recently when Prime West purchased Shining Bank. So now everybody who owned Prime West or Shining owns the Shining Bank, I mean Prime West. And the other day, this foreign company came in and bid a 33 or 34% premium to where the stock was trading as in an all-cash buyout offer for this royalty trust. Now, the price they're paying is still quite a bit below what the high that either Shining Bank or Prime West traded for, you know, before the Canadian government announced the higher taxes that would eventually be imposed but have yet to be imposed on these trusts. And I remember when that happened and the trust dropped, one of the things I talked about and one of the reasons I was recommending them is I realized that the assets were now so cheap that many of them would end up being bought out by foreign interests and would not even be around to be affected by the tax increases, which are still not necessarily going to be enacted. And who knows, maybe some of these buyouts will cause the Canadian government to rethink the strategy. Because if they put the tax breaks back in, these stocks will rise, their prices will rise substantially, and they might not necessarily be so vulnerable to foreign interests. But the main reason I'm pointing this out is that just to reiterate how attractive I still believe this sector is, there's a lot of opportunity, you know, not only to collect some very, very substantial dividend yields, but to have a situation where one of two things might happen. More of these stocks are going to get bought out by foreign interests at substantial premiums, or the Canadian government is going to come to its senses and cancel the planned tax increase. Either scenario means we should have substantial capital gains if we buy these stocks, and we know we're going to get great dividend income. So I'm still a big fan of these Canadian trusts. And even another one of our trusts that we're actually down in was basically bought out by another trust that we also own. And, of course, it jumped up as well. But there's a lot of that, you know, a lot of action going on in this sector. Even today, you know, Cramer on his show Mad Money, did a whole segment on Canadian trusts, which makes me a little bit nervous, but not necessarily. And he actually, you know, recommended one in particular, which is a stock, again, that we've been buying for our clients maybe for about, I think I started buying this one maybe about 6 years ago, 7 years ago. But it's one of our largest positions. It happens to trade on the New York Stock Exchange. And so he, you know, strongly recommended that one. But I still like this sector. It's, you know, gone a little bit more mainstream, you know, now that you're hearing about it on CNBC. But, it, you know, it's not to the extent that I think that we need to be concerned that there's somehow, you know, too much money going into these things because they're still cheap. Also, I want to talk quite a bit, you know, on this show about the debate that seems to be going on, and this is the subject of my commentary that will be on my website by Friday, you know, between the camp that feels that, you know, the economy is slowing and that inflation is therefore not a problem and that the Fed can cut rates without having to worry about inflation because of the economic weakness, and the other camp that thinks, no, the economy is sound and that these rate cuts are therefore going to exacerbate inflation. And so you've got, you know, the one camp that thinks inflation is a threat and one camp that thinks it's not. But the reality is both camps are wrong. Because the camp that thinks that inflation is a threat thinks it's a threat because the economy is going to be strong. But they're wrong because the economy is going to be weak. Now the camp that thinks inflation is going to be under control thinks it's going to be under control because the economy is weak. But no, the economy is weak, but inflation is going to get worse. Consumer prices are going to rise. And a lot of people think that, you know, those two conditions are mutually exclusive. They think that a weak economy cancels out inflation, that somehow the reduction in demand will mean that prices fall. And that's not the way it works. It's actually the opposite. It's a strong, growing economy where more goods are produced that keeps consumer prices in check. And a weak economy, especially one with a falling currency, helps push a consumer prices much, much higher. So we're going to talk about stagflation, and I want to talk about this whole, you know, recession or inflation versus deflation, and really, because there's still a lot of confusion about what all this means and what we're headed for. And I want to, you know, spend a little more time again on this show talking about that. But let me go ahead and go to the phones. I see a few people are already starting to drop out. But let me take the first caller, Ken, up in California. Go ahead, Ken.
Peter, is the situation with these Canadian Rail Trusts similar to the situation that we have with the banks? Like today I was hearing all this rumors about, you know, Bear Stearns came out there and said all these bad numbers, but the market's saying, hey, that's great that they're doing bad because now people want to buy them.
You know, there's rumors of, you know, there's Warren Buffett looking at Bear Stearns. Look, I mean, Buffett's a smart guy, you know, but if he goes into Bear Stearns, he's going to get burned. I mean, these things I said are ticking time bombs. We have no idea what kind of stuff is buried beneath the balance sheets of this brokerage firm, but it's going to be a mess. I mean, they are the counterparty to so much stuff, and they have so many loans on their books and so much, you know, derivatives, and you know, they're just going to explode. And, you know, they've been making all this money. This whole phony credit bubble, that has been driving Wall Street profits. And the credit crunch, as all the credit dries up, you know, these opportunities to make money are going to dry up with it. And now all that's going to be left is all kinds of hidden losses, all kinds of lawsuits. You know, these financials are going to get clobbered. It doesn't mean they're going to go broke. I mean, some of them might. I don't know. And there's certainly going to be opportunities to make money, but they're not going to be able to make anywhere near the type of money they were making during the last 3 or 4 years. It's just not going to be possible.
Jim Cramer says if there's any one stock you can own, and he said you better buy it here. If you sell it, you're stupid because it's just starting to get good. And he says that's Goldman Sachs.
Well, I mean, I think you should just stick with gold and forget about the Sachs part. But I would not touch Goldman Sachs, you know, with his money.
You know, when I listen to all these analysts, one thing I've noticed they all do lately, and it kind of bugs me, and I'm wondering, you know, when you go on this permanent panel, I hope you don't pick up this habit that they all have of every time they're asked a question, they say, sure, and then they answer the question. Have you noticed that?
No, I don't think I pay that much attention to what anybody says. I usually have the volume turned down.
Anytime you watch when you get on this panel, every time they're asked a question, they always say, sure, and then they start answering the question. It's driving me nuts, Peter.
All right, well, yeah, I think, you know, sometimes, you know, you're up on the camera and stuff, you know, sometimes these things slip out. Cut them a little slack.
Yeah, but when they all do it.
What I'm more concerned about is a lot of the nonsense that comes out of their mouths, not the way they start their sentences.
Yeah, but if you find that you're starting every sentence with the word sure, you better be careful with that.
All right. Have you read my book yet?
I have read it. I've recommended it to my friends, but, you know, I still hang out with the same friends that I had as a kid, and they all still read comic books.
Well, all right. Well, thanks for the call, Ken.
Bye now.
I got Fanning on from New York.
Yes.
Is that your first name, your last name, or?
This is my first name. My last name is Jen.
Okay. Well, how are you?
Doing good. I was listening to you, and I didn't realize I was on the air. I've been looking at the. I've been doing some international investment, but I've been doing it mainly in my. Brokerage. One is TD Ameritrade. The other is Vanguard from my employer. I also have a former commodities trader whom kind of mentored me through the years. You know, when I started investing and learning the kind of the ropes of investing. And one thing we've been talking about off and on through the years is about all the people taking. Refinancing their house and taking money out of their equity out of their house and start spending it.
Yeah. Well, what did you have a question or?
Yes. The question is that I've looked at the TD Ameritrade and E-Trade, and they say they have ability to do global trading. How good are they? And
it's not. I mean, basically, if you're going to be at Ameritrade right now, as far as I know, and you could check with Ameritrade, but as far as I know, Ameritrade is offering access through the pink sheets, through the over-the-counter markets. There's no direct way to get to the foreign exchanges. You're going through the market makers, and you don't want to do that. I mean, you want to avoid that, and that's what we help you do at Euro Pacific Capital, because we are trading directly on all these foreign exchanges. And, you know, it's going to get more and more important, because there are, you know, quite a few foreign companies that have ADRs. Generally, those are not the companies that we've found the most attractive, but there's an article on my website today about, you know, the rush of companies to delist from the New York Stock Exchange and the Amex, and more companies are not seeking listings here or are delisting because they feel that there's more volume on their local exchanges, and they don't want to, you know, have to comply with Sarbanes-Oxley and pay all these costs. So they're just basically leaving the New York Stock Exchange. And, again, that's also a symptom of our diminished status in the world, of the fact that, you know, other capital markets are becoming more mature. There's more savings and investable funds offshore than there is here. And so it's going to get more and more important that you can access these foreign markets, because fewer and fewer companies are going to even list their shares in this country.
Right. And how about the E-Trade? They just started in...
Yeah, E-Trade does have some direct capability so that they can route your orders directly. I'm not really sure, you know, what kind of deal they get on a foreign exchange or what kind of fees they're paying their local brokers. I'm sure they're more substantial than what I have, although they're probably, you know, going to charge a discount commission on top of all those costs. So, you know, they might be able to be cost competitive with me. But, you know, they're not going to give you any advice. They're not going to help you
right.
Stock selection. They're just basically there to buy the foreign stocks that you instruct them.
Yeah, and I've been looking at it. They only trade in Canada, France, Germany, Hong Kong, Japan, and the UK.
Yeah. They only have five markets. So, you know, I mean, we're investing in many, many more markets than that. And I'm sure eventually they're going to open up more markets. I mean, there's no question that they will. But what it comes down to is, you know, we can definitely get better executions, and, you know, more importantly to most of our clients, we can help you figure out which stocks to buy. Because, see, most of the stocks that we're buying for clients, mm-hmm. none of my clients have ever heard of them. I mean, they would have no reason to have heard of them. So we're right. buying stocks that people have never heard of. So the only way you're going to find out of these stocks is if you research them yourself.
Right.
And, you know, if you want to take the time to do that, and look through the thousands and thousands of stocks traded around the world and pick your own countries and pick the industries and pick the individual stocks and do it all yourself, maybe, you know, you could do it. But most of my clients would rather, you know, spend their time more productively and just pay me a commission to do that for them.
Right. And which leads me to the other thing is that I've in my existing accounts have done primarily with ETF trading. Like buying primarily about my allocation as of now is now around my Ameritrade account is about 70% international and 30% domestic, and my Vanguard account is about over 70% international and 30% simply because
I mean you want to be as much as you can international. And if you want to have any domestic investments, and, you know, I have domestic investments myself. I'm not 100% foreign. But if you look at my domestic stocks, they're mining stocks. They're oil stocks, oil companies, oil service stocks. So they're basically benefiting from the boom in global resources and inflation.
Right.
They're selling into international markets. So
Peter was talking to me.
And we still have some quality world-class companies in this
yeah.
country. But one of my, you know, I have a couple of main concerns about investing in U.S. companies. But one of the primary ones is the windfalls profit taxes that I'm afraid that the U.S. government will impose on a lot of these U.S.
I'm looking at foreign. I'm actually, and it's originally, just even 6 months ago, my allocation was 55 U.S., 45 international, and it's been dwindling down.
Yeah, but I know. Well, you got to, let me finish my point, though. I mean, I can imagine, let's say oil's at $150 a barrel, and, you know, we're in this steep recession, but Mobil and Chevron are reporting these huge record profits. You know,
right.
It's going to be very politically popular to scapegoat them and say, look, why should they be enjoying these fat profits when the rest of us are suffering? Let's impose a 75% tax on those profits and use those that money
in the whole U.S. auto industry.
Yeah, I mean, so you gotta worry about the political risks of being, you know, about U.S. companies, even the good ones, even because America is gonna be a mess, an economic mess. Other countries are not gonna have these problems, and so their politicians are not as likely, you know, to impose those kind of, you know, confiscatory taxes
The thing is that my Ameritrade account I can move over because that's all cash. Essentially, that's all after tax. But my Vanguard account—that's actually like a SEP IRA. Is that how easy?
Yeah, look,
feasible is
Euro Pacific Capital. I am a brokerage firm, you know, just like any other firm, with the exception of the fact that, you know, we give out pretty good investment advice and help our clients make money. But you know, we can have any type of account, any type of IRA or pension or profit sharing account that you can have at any of those discount brokers or any other full service broker. You can have the same account with me at Euro Pacific Capital,
mm-hmm.
and you can invest exclusively in foreign stocks. And just because you have an IRA doesn't mean you can't fill that IRA up with stocks in Singapore and in Norway and New Zealand. I mean,
yeah, I really want to get out. Originally, my original intention to go into international, which I started doing in 2005, was to get the higher growth, being that I'm very young and I'm single. I don't have much debt at all. And so I'm just basically saving and investing as fast as I could. And to get the faster growth rate, I was going international, but at least I had some in my U.S. stocks.
Well, we can help you. Look, when you get up, I mean, try, you know, giving us a call. I mean, maybe there's some people in the California office right now, but I know that they had some computer problem. But there might be a few guys hanging out in Connecticut, you know, at 800-727-7922. Or you could.
Yeah, I actually gave you guys a call, I think, guy's name, but
I don't want to spend too much time on it on the air because I got a lot of callers.
Okay,
but I would give one of my reps a call and work about, you know, moving some of those accounts over.
Okay, I'm actually scheduled to go there and on Saturday drive down to Connecticut.
Okay, great. Well, that's where I am. So
I'd definitely like to meet with you.
All right. Well, take care. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
All right, let me take it quick. I know I got a lot of callers queuing up, so hold on. Let me take a quick commercial break, and we'll be back for your calls and hopefully the discussion on inflation, deflation, and stuff like that.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that is passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Okay, we are back. And wait a minute, do I still have Mitchell from North Carolina, or did I take that call already? Okay, he dropped out. All right. Let's go to Tyler in California. Go ahead, Tyler.
Oh, how you doing, Peter? Listen, Peter, I didn't get a chance to listen to other people on the show, so hopefully no one asked this question already. But I had read an article by Gary North talking about deflation instead of inflating that's going on. Did you have a chance to read that at all?
No.
Okay.
So it's a common, and this is, you know, part of the theme that I wanted to talk about. I mean, you know, there is going to be deflation in the sense that we're going to have a bust, right? Of the financial bubbles. So real estate prices are going to fall, and stock prices are going to fall, and bond prices are going to fall. But when most people think about deflation, they think about the opposite of what they think inflation meaning is, and they think inflation is when the price of goods goes up, when it costs more to shop at the supermarket or, you know, buy gasoline. People think of rising consumer prices. And when they think of deflation, they think of falling consumer prices. Well, we're not going to get that. We're going to get rising consumer prices. We're going to get consumer prices going through the roof. And that's what's going to happen. but we are going to see real estate prices falling. Now, if you want to think about deflation as falling prices, prices will fall, but in terms of gold, right? If you want to look at gold as money, then yes, there will be outright deflation. The price of everything is going to come down in terms of gold. But the price of very few things are going to come down in terms of dollars, because the Federal Reserve will create, you know, enough dollars to make sure that prices rise. And they're going to rise substantially, but they will probably fall for real estate and stocks. But it's possible that the Fed creates so much inflation that the nominal price of real estate actually goes up. But the real price, right, priced in gold, will collapse even more substantially in that scenario.
I just find it hard to see. Like, right now I could see how stocks would fall, real estate would fall, but I don't know how. I know this sounds kind of funny. How are they going to affect bread prices or something at the store?
The price of bread is going to go up. The price of everything, and maybe I'll just use your call to get into this, how the weak dollar, causes prices to rise, how inflation causes prices to rise. See, most people think that if we go into a recession, right, consumer prices will fall because they only look at the demand side. Yes, if there's a recession and people lose their jobs and they lose their home equity, Americans will have less money to spend, so Americans will buy fewer things. So most people would think, aha, less demand equals lower prices. But they ignore the supply side of the equation. Here's what happens. When the U.S. dollar falls, as it's falling now, and it's going to fall a lot further, right? What happens is we import far fewer goods into this country. Why? Well, because foreign goods become more expensive for us. They simultaneously become less expensive for other people. So, for example, let's say China has been sending a widget to the United States, and all of a sudden the dollar falls. That widget becomes much more expensive for an American, but maybe it becomes much cheaper for a European, or maybe cheaper for somebody in China. So instead of China sending that widget to America, it either sends it to Europe or it consumes it itself. So we have fewer products coming into this country. At the same time, we have more products leaving this country. You know, if I'm a fisherman and I catch a lobster, and all of a sudden the dollar collapses, and all of a sudden now somebody in Europe is willing to give me a lot more money for that lobster, I'm not going to sell it here in America. I'm going to send it over to Europe. So as the dollar falls, more goods leave this country. So what happens is the supply of consumer goods contracts as a result of the weakening dollar. Therefore, yes, Americans demand fewer products, but the supply also goes down. The net effect of a reduction in demand simultaneous with a reduction in supply is going to be that prices rise. So Americans are going to consume a lot less, sure, but when they do consume, they're going to pay a lot more for it, because reduced consumption in America is going to be offset by increased consumption abroad.
Okay.
Interesting thing is, a lot of the stuff that we're going to export, sure, we might export more manufactured goods, but the problem is we don't have a lot of factories. So a lot of the goods that we're going to be exporting are not going to be things that we manufacture. They're going to be things that are already here. Used things, used cars, used electronics, used furniture, all sorts of things that we bought a year or two ago that we can no longer afford to keep, because we need to heat our houses, we need to feed ourselves, and we can't afford to do it unless we sell these items. And so that's not going to be really good for our GDP. If we sell a used television set to someone in China, I mean, it's not really, it's not going to create a lot of jobs over here. So, but this is what's going to happen. Consumer goods are going to be leaving this country, and paper money is going to be coming in, and prices are going to be going up. And that's what very few people understand, and they somehow think that a weak economy is going to cancel out rising prices. No, it's just going to accelerate the rate at which they rise, because the weak economy and these low interest rates is going to push down the dollar, and that's going to push up prices for everything we buy, not just imported goods, but everything that's produced or anything that's not nailed down. Because if it's not nailed down, we can send it to China or Asia. And if somebody there can buy it, the price is going to go up.
All right. So how about, I did read an article before I mentioned when I called in. It was the one that was the most misquoted you in the Australian news.
Uh-huh.
And, are we talking about, have they been inflating a lot since 2000? Or could you, technically, I guess they've been debasing the currency since 1913. So my thing is...
It's been debasing the currency pretty much ever since it was created, but it's been doing it much more rapidly now than it has been in the past. That's one.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro-Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that has passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Okay, I'm back. Sorry about that. I feel something happened with my line. But we were talking about the money supply creation and the Fed. And, yes, sure, the Fed's been debasing the money supply, but it's been doing that at a much more rapid pace recently. You know, that's why gold prices are as high as they are and headed higher. That's why the dollar index this week traded at a new all-time record low, the lowest it's ever traded since the index was created. It got down to, I think, 78.10. It was up a little bit today, but we're quietly drifting lower. And remember, you know, my forecast for the dollar index is 40. You know, that's still about half its current level. I think it could make the trip down to 60 by the end of next year, you know, which is, you know, quite a ways down. And so it's still, you know, it's still not too late. There was an article that mentioned me in one of my clients on the front page of the Wall Street Journal, the D section today. But it had me quoting as, you know, saying that many people were contacting me, asking me if it's too late to get out of the dollar. You know, did I miss the boat? Is it too late? And my answer is no, it's not too late at all. I mean, I think the dollar is going to keep on falling. And, yeah, sure, it would have been better if people followed my advice 6 months ago, a year ago, 2 years ago, 5 years ago. But it's not too late, because if you have dollars, they're going to be worth less in a year than they are today. And so there's no reason to go down with the ship. You know, you haven't missed the boat. The boat's going to sink, so get off it. You know, you want to stay dry. You want to get into a life raft. That's how I've been describing myself, and what I think I've been doing here as a broker at Euro Pacific Capital is I'm trying to get people off a doomed ship into a life raft. And the minute you recognize that the ship is doomed, as long as it isn't completely submerged, get out. You know, and the sooner the better. And if people wait another 6 months or another year, you know, it won't be too late, but they may be waist-deep in water as opposed to ankle-deep where they are right now. So just, you know, get out. Don't worry that the dollar's too low. It's only going to go lower. Just make the decision to get your financial house in order. Get rid of your dollar-denominated assets. Get invested abroad. You know, Ben Bernanke and the government are looking to bail out the economy, bail out homeowners, bail out mortgage lenders, with a printing press, with inflation. They're not going to do it through higher taxes, you know, but the bailout has to be paid for. There's no free lunch. And if they're not going to raise taxes, if they're just going to print money, then they're just passing the cost on to anybody who's foolish enough to be holding their savings in U.S. dollars. And that's foreigners and American citizens. Anyway, let me take another call. I think Larry from Florida. Go ahead, Larry. Is Larry there?
Hello.
Is this Larry?
Yes.
Hey, Larry, you're on the air.
Oh, I am right now? Okay. I'll shut this off. Good. Hello?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, is this Peter?
It is.
Oh, Peter. Yes, I have a question. Please clear this up for me regarding the Canadian Oil Trust. Some of these companies are buying out our Canadian Oil Trust. So if we hold positions, similar to a hostile takeover, and we're taken out of our positions?
Well, they're not necessarily hostile when you have the approval or the unanimous approval of the board of directors, so they're kind of friendly. But what happens is sometimes, like in the case of the Prime West, it's an all cash deal. So when the transaction culminates, you're just going to get a check,
sure.
Canadian dollars. So it's not a question of and sometimes, like the deal that's going on right now for Vault Energy, that is a stock deal, in which case you simply get shares of another Canadian trust for the one that you already own. So in one,
I had a bunch of Shining, and now it was purchased, and now we're being taken out of that, so I am left.
Yeah, I mean, the Shining deal with Prime West was a stock deal, so you weren't out of the sector. Basically, you just got new shares in Prime West to replace the shares that you owned in Shining Bank.
But we haven't been taken out of that.
Yeah, but this is now a cash deal. So when you get your check, you're out, and now you've got to take that money and buy a new investment because now you've got your cash back.
Well, yeah. Well, unfortunately, I bought those a little higher, I think, than what we're going to receive.
Yeah.
So I guess I won't have taxes.
What you can do, though, is you can take that cash and invest it in another oil and gas trust that is probably a lot lower than it was in the past as well, because some of these trusts, I think, are very cheap, especially given where oil prices are trading. Now, some of them have been dragged down by the weakness in natural gas prices, but I think that weakness is temporary. But these stocks are acting like it's permanent.
So how many of our trusts have been taken out?
Well, quite a few. I mean, you know, over the years, I mean, you know, quite a few of them have merged or been bought out. I mean, you know, I've been buying them for clients for about 10 years. And, you know, many of the stocks I used to buy no longer exist because they got bought out by the ones I still own. So there has been a lot of consolidation, and I expect that to continue, especially given how cheap the assets are. And so we still recommend them. I mean, I think they're great buys.
Well, I better call Catalfio and find out what positions I have been.
All right. Well, yeah, give him a call. He's in the Phoenix office. I'm sure he's probably still at work.
You think he's working? Okay, I'll call. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Peter. Bye.
Bye-bye. Let's go to Stuart from Delaware. Is Stuart on the line?
Yes, I am.
Hey, how are you, Stuart?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. What's your question?
Wanted to speak about, Peter had mentioned before about that he's invested in the gold miners. And
I'm Peter.
Oh, you are Peter. I'm sorry, didn't recognize your voice there. I wanted to see what your thoughts were on the gold miners. If you have any names that you'd like to share with us that you particularly like.
And I've got a lot of gold mining stocks that I own. I mean, I own so many of them that I mean, pretty much, you know, all the big ones. I mean, the news came out today. Some big news came out on Newmont Mining, and Newmont was down about 5% on the day.
Right, I saw that.
Came out with news that their production costs were going to be about 10% higher than what they had originally told Wall Street they would be. In addition, they said they were having difficulties replenishing their reserves, and therefore they were not going to be able to replenish this year's production. And so that was interpreted not only as bad news for Newmont, but it dragged the entire mining sector went down, with just a couple of exceptions, and gold prices went down.
Right.
The reality is that kind of announcement is very bullish, not only for gold prices, but for the gold sector. Because what that says is, hey, the supply of gold in the future is being diminished.
It's not as great as they thought it was.
That makes gold more valuable.
That's right.
The reason that the cost of mining is rising so rapidly is because of all the inflation. There's so much inflation that it's making mining gold more expensive. It's just that so many people don't understand how much inflation there is because they believe the lies that they're being told by government about how low inflation is, and they're looking at these government CPI numbers rather than actual money supply growth or consumer prices. But eventually people are going to understand how much inflation there is, and then that's also very bullish for gold as an inflation hedge. But also, from the mining sector, if Newmont Mining can't replenish its reserves through with a drill bit, you know, it's going to look to replenish those reserves through acquisitions.
That's right.
And it's going to go buying a lot of smaller companies for their reserves. And that's inherently bullish. So it just shows there's still not nearly enough attention being applied to this sector. These stocks are still very cheap. I still continue to put additional money that I'm earning into the mining sector. I mean, I'm still buying non-mining stocks and yield-oriented stocks. I put some more money into Canadian trusts in the last couple of weeks for myself, but I still favor these mining stocks. I still think that if you really want to get rich, right, and I'm not talking to clients who just want to preserve their wealth and not go broke, which is the majority of my clients, and that's where, you know, these conservative foreign stocks are coming in handy. But if you want to take a shot and try to really get rich off what's going to happen, the way to do that is in the precious metals and mining, because I think prices in this sector can go up, you know, 10 times or 100 times.
Well, and I totally agree. I mean, I've been playing around with the sector since January of 2002. You know, gold was just touching 300. And really, there hasn't been much movement in 5 years, for the most part. You know, you've had places here and there, and the gold stocks just seem to get cheaper and cheaper to me.
Yeah, some of the gold stocks that I bought, you know, and looking at prices from 2004, and some of the stocks are half of what they were in 2004.
That's right, when gold was trading at not even 500.
Yeah, and now, of course, I mean, they're a lot higher than they were in 2000, 2001.
Sure.
And there are some gold stocks I own that are 5 and 10 times what I paid for them, but, you know, but they haven't necessarily moved up that much. A few of them have made new highs recently, but I also have a number of gold stocks I own that are way off their highs or are actually below what I paid for them years ago. So, you know, there's still a lot of, they're still relatively cheap. But remember, gold is still only at 700. I mean,
what do you think is going to be the...
A lot higher than 700.
Well, I believe it's you know, way below fair value right now, but that's a different story. But what do you think is going to be the catalyst to get the gold mining sector to catch a bid?
It's going to be the price of gold. I mean, I think that a lot of people think that gold stocks lead. I don't think that's the case. I think the metal is going to lead because I think there are more speculators in gold. And I still think from a sentiment indicator, there's a lot of skepticism, a lot of people worried about gold stocks falling, about gold falling. But what I think it's going to take to really invigorate the mining sector is going to be a $50 or $100, I mean, a real move up in the price of gold. Maybe when gold's at 800 or 9, at some point it's going to take away all the doubt and the fear that is currently in the precious metals mining sector, because I think there's more fear and then greed in the market right now. I think there are more people waiting for the market to sell off, worried about a big correction in the U.S. market or a recession, dragging down gold stocks, dragging down gold prices. So we got to wring that fear out of the system, and we got to get some greed into the market. And when that greed comes in, these stocks are going to take off.
Right, because, you know, some of the stocks that I'm watching, I've been concentrating on the juniors and the explorers just because, you know, I'm a younger guy and I want to be a little more aggressive with what I'm going for. And there's companies out there that are selling as low as, you know, $20 an ounce in the ground or some, you know, a little less, a little more, but, I mean, ridiculous values.
Yeah, I know.
It's
gotta buy it. Look, right now, not a lot of people understand the gold story. Very few people own gold.
I don't think they're hearing the gold
inflation. You know, at some point in time, everybody's going to want gold, and they're going to pay through the nose to get mine.
Right.
That's basically how I look at it. You want to buy an asset when very few people want it. If you can anticipate a change in circumstances so that in the future, a lot of people are going to want it. And when very few people want something, the price is low. When everybody wants something, the price is high. So you want to buy something that nobody wants and hoard it until everybody wants it. And then when everybody wants it, you can sell it out at a very, very high price.
Oh, for some man prices. Sounds good to me. That was pretty much what I wanted to cover today. By the way, something you were just discussing with the last caller about the supply part of the equation, I think that's, I agree, that's something that a lot of people don't understand and is a huge factor.
Yep. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, thank you very much for taking my call.
Okay, Sue. All right, and now I think it's Dave is next from Minnesota.
Yep.
Dave?
Yes.
Hey, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good, good.
Is this Peter?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was listening to you on the radio.
Yeah, you got to turn that radio down.
Okay. Yeah, I picked up your book, read it last week. I'm working with Brian to get an account opened up. Question about the economy, okay? I'm hearing the last few days there's speculation that the Feds may drop interest rates further in October based on some of the economic numbers.
Yeah, they very well may, because the economy, look, what the Fed did so far is not going to ease the problems in the economy. It's not going to help people afford the houses that they own. It's not going to stop the recession from coming. It's simply going to fan the fires of inflation and make interest rates rise, not fall. So, yes, if the Fed is cutting rates because it's worried about the economy, it's going to be worried about the economy even more the next time it meets. So maybe it'll cut rates again.
Yeah, and that was my question, is if they cut rates again, that's further going to devalue the dollar, as I understand.
Yes, it's going to keep on happening until eventually the Fed is going to be caught in a situation where long-term rates are going to be going higher and higher and higher, and they're going to be forced to realize that if they cut short rates again, it's going to send long rates even higher. Eventually, the Fed is going to be forced to follow the market and start to raise interest rates. despite the fact that the economy is obviously either headed for or mired in a recession. And see, when that happens, that's when it all hits the fan. That's when Wall Street realizes that the party's over. They see that we have interest rate hikes in a recession, and there's no more bailouts, there's no more Bernanke put or Greenspan put, that it's all, you know what, is hitting the fan.
Right. Now, the stock market would decline, but wouldn't the dollar regain its value at that point?
No, it won't. I mean, because there's still going to be flight from the dollar, even with higher interest rates. The effects of a recession is still going to result in capital flight. Now, here's the thing. If they raise interest rates, the dollar will fall, but it won't completely collapse. It will lose value, but it will retain, you know, the majority of its value, but it'll still go down quite a bit. But if they don't do that, if they just continue to print and ignore the weakness of the dollar, then it will turn into a run on the dollar and hyperinflation.
Okay.
No matter what we do, the dollar is going to have to be reduced in value. Americans are a lot poorer. See, as a result of what we've done to ourselves, right, what did we do over the last decade or so? We had a huge party. We borrowed a fortune. We borrowed trillions of dollars from the rest of the world, and we spent it. Right? We blew it on consumption. Well, when you do that as an individual, when you borrow huge sums of money and spend it, there's a consequence to that. The consequence is you've impoverished yourself. You indulge the present, but you sacrifice the future. So you live high on the hog for a while, but then the bills come due and you can't pay them, and your creditors force you to accept a lower standard of living. That's what's going to happen to America. We have reduced our standard of living. We have reduced the value of our money. The dollar is going to fall. But what the Fed needs to do is it needs to, you know, reassert some decent monetary policy to make sure the dollar only falls, that it doesn't completely collapse. And that's the real risk that we run, that the Fed doesn't do the right thing, that the government doesn't do the right thing, and we stumble into a Weimar Republic, you know, or, you know, if you want to do something more modern, a Zimbabwe experience, you know, where you have to bring suitcases, you know, with you to a restaurant if you want to have a sandwich.
Okay. Now, let's say that the dollar, you know, falls and eventually they raise interest rates and the dollar value starts to recover. How does that affect the foreign investments at that point? Are they less attractive at that point?
Well, I mean, when the dollar starts to rally, obviously, you know, when that time comes, then, you know, that's going to diminish the appeal of investing outside the United States. And, you know, that's one of the things that I need to keep an eye on. I don't think we're there yet. But at some point, I am probably going to recommend that we, you know, sell a lot of our foreign stocks and invest back in the United States. I mean, the key is timing it right. You know, we're nowhere near there yet. But, you know, if you go back to the 1970s, right, which is the model for what we're going to happen, although it's going to be worse this time, you know, the dollar lost two-thirds of its value between 1972 and 1978. So the smart thing to do, you know, during the 1960s, the latter part of the 1960s, was to get all your money out of dollars and buy Swiss francs, buy Japanese yen, buy euros, buy gold, buy all that stuff, right? But in 1980, right, when the dollar was at its low, when it had declined 70%, when gold was at 800, but you can get, you know, 14% interest on U.S. government bonds, right? That was the time to have been smart enough to have sold and cashed out all your foreign profits and brought all the money home and bought the Dow Jones with a 6% yield when it was at 800 or, you know, and bought, you know, government bonds with these double-digit yields. That was the trade of a lifetime. Now, you know, I wasn't around back then. I mean, I was in, you know, junior high school.
Yeah, I was.
But I don't know if I'd have been smart enough. See, what happened, a lot of people who called the 1970s right, who got on board with gold and oil and foreign currencies, didn't make the change in 1980 and stuck with those positions throughout the 1980s. You know, that was a big problem. And what I have to make sure that I help my clients do is avoid that. Now, I do understand that we're in much worse financial shape than we were in the 1970s, and it's going to be far more difficult for a guy like Paul Volcker to step up to the plate or and do what was done in 1980 that caused those cycles to reverse, right? But I have to be on the lookout for it, and I have to always look for an opportunity, and I'm very optimistic and hopeful that we will get the opportunity to bring all this money that we've put safely abroad, to bring it all back, and buy a lot of cheap U.S. assets, you know, when no one else has the money or the inclination to buy them.
Sure, that makes sense. Well, I've been working with Brian this week to get an account opened with Euro Pacific. Another question I had was how much of your knowledge and experience trickles down to your consultants? I mean, all of it,
because I have, regular, not regularly scheduled, but I have conference calls with all the brokers. I send emails, sometimes daily, things that I think are important. I tell my sales force what I'm thinking. We all work off the same list of approved stocks, so all the stocks that are being recommended fit within my way of thinking and my philosophy. So all of this, everything that I know is going through the brokers. That's the whole idea. The whole idea is that no matter who you talk to at Euro Pacific Capital, you're going to get my ideas. You're going to get them filtered to you through a different source. And these my brokers are not just parrots. They understand the reasoning behind what we're doing. And what their job is also to do as a finance representative is try to fit my recommended stocks to the individual investor. Some investors might come to me and they already have a lot of energy stocks or oil stocks. Fine. So, we'll look towards other investments, or some, and people might already have a lot of gold stocks. They don't need any more. Some people might be, might need more income than others. So it just all depends. But each broker will be able to talk to you about your individual circumstances and then try to tailor make a portfolio based on my recommended stocks.
Okay, super. That's what I wanted to hear, so I appreciate it. That was actually the last of my questions. Thanks.
All right, great. Well, thanks for the call. I know I got to rush. I think I have two more callers on the line and just about 7 more minutes left of the program. Let me take Todd from Washington. Go ahead, Todd.
Is this Peter?
Yes.
Hey, Peter, thanks for taking the call. Just wanted to let you know I'm almost done reading your book. I love it. And I had a question. My house is for sale here in Seattle, and what they're saying as far as the prices go is completely ridiculous. They're not even close to what the media is saying how homes are going for. So what I'm asking you is, do I sell at whatever the bid is just to get out, and then what I have left I'm going to give you guys to invest, or do I keep...
I think so in general. Now, I don't know. Obviously, if the bid is some crazy low price, you got to take a look at what homes rent for in your area. Take a look at what kind of bids you're actually getting.
Right.
And then compare that. If I sold this house, if I got the cash and, I invested it with, some yield-oriented investments, can I rent something comparable with the money? Take a look at, do the math in your head. Figure out if it makes sense. See if real estate really is overpriced. But it's my thinking that if you hit a bid, anyone that sells today, I think, is going to be able to buy back cheaper. I think that the real estate price decline is going to be huge. Prices doubled and tripled.
Right, right.
People will acknowledge that we have this bubble, we have all these crazy lending standards, but now people expect prices to only fall 2%, 3%, 6%. How can prices double and triple and then go down 2% or 6%? It makes no sense.
It makes no sense.
And if these high prices were simply a function of people being able to buy houses they can't afford using teaser rates and no doc loans and interest only loans that are no longer available, right? If you need a down payment now and you need a real mortgage, then you got to have a real home price. You can't have a bubble price without bubble lending standards.
No, absolutely.
Hand in hand. So if you can get out, my inclination would be to do it,
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at too.
All right, great. Thanks for, glad you enjoyed the book. Anybody who's reading my book, if you read the book and you liked it, go up on Amazon and write a review.
I will. As soon as I'm done, I'll do that.
And if you read it, you didn't like it, then, don't bother.
No, it's a great book. I'm with you almost 100% on everything.
All right, great. Thanks for the call, Todd.
Thank you.
We've got time for one last call from Dale from California. Go ahead, Dale.
Hi, Peter. I just wanted to make a comment. At the top of the program, you said that you, because of the activity that you had in on some of these other programs, that you might have to take off some of the videos that you have from...
I might not post them. If I'm going to be on TV four or five... If I'm going to be on TV so often, it might not be like I need to post them all.
Oh, okay. Well, I would actually, ask you to kind of reconsider, because I think that this is a historical first. You're having the opportunity to get some of these guys live on the air, deriding, your predictions of the coming bust, and we've never had this before in history where people are really on tape mocking you as it's starting to happen.
Oh yeah, no, I'm going to keep all the past ones. I'm just, and maybe I will keep all the future ones. Just it's going to, I'm going to have so much video on my site. It's going to be ridiculous.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I go back to even a couple of months ago when you were on some of the programs with Fox, and some of these guys were recommending you get into Merrill Lynch, and then you know a month later it takes a huge dive.
Well, there's so many of these stocks that people recommend, and I get a kick if I go back and listen to some from a year ago or 2 years ago, and, you know, the same guys that are on these shows today, you know, you look at their predictions, everything they say is wrong. Everything I've said is right, yet when I say something, they still laugh at me.
Yeah.
Just, as if they forget about all the things I've said in the past that they also laughed at that turned out to be right. It's like they still can't figure it out. They still don't understand that I know what I'm talking about. They don't give me, like today I'm on the CNBC, and the minute I say Bernanke should have raised interest rates, you know, the host jumps in and interrupts me. He says, oh, that's ridiculous. I mean, they don't interrupt the bulls when they say stuff that I think is ridiculous, but they interject their comments. They don't really show me any respect for the accuracy of the forecast that I've already made. It's like every time I come on there, it's a clean slate. Everybody gets amnesia to what I said in the past, and just when I say something that's outside of what everybody else says, they just think, oh, this is ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost all the time, as soon as you say something, they go, oh, come on, I can't believe it. But I think that, you know, these videos are going to be a very interesting historical artifact someday, and I hope you keep them all.
Well, okay, I'll try.
All right, thanks.
Okay. Anyway, I know we're running out of time, but look, you know, this is a lot of interesting stuff to talk about. You know, I'm getting a lot more calls now. I only gave out the 800 number once, yet I had, a whole page full of callers. And so I know I'm getting a little bit more popular. My website is picking up a lot more traffic. I can see the numbers in the page views and, you know, the depth of it, the reach, whatever they're talking about. So the message is getting out there. We're getting a lot more calls than we normally get. I mean, the inquiries that I'm coming into, I'm in the process of looking for office space in New York right now because I really need to hire more brokers. So I would definitely ask people to bear with me if sometimes people are opening up accounts or calling up and it takes a little bit longer for us to get back to you, because we've got to expand to meet this new demand. More people are waking up to what's happening. And, you know, they don't want to be led to the slaughter. They want to make a break for it. So we're doing the best we can. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Again, I will be here again next week at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, www.europac.net. Don't forget to buy Crash Proof, How to Profit from the Coming Economic Collapse, and call us at 800-727-7922. Speak to you next week. Bye-bye.